Perimeter Institute. So thank you for inviting me. In this talk, I present a summary of my recent results on coherence distillation in the context of quantum thermodynamics, which can be taught as an analogous of entanglement distillation in the context of entanglement theory. So here in this picture, I've depicted a hypothetical machine that I call it coherence distillation machine for distilling coherence with respect to energy eigenbases. So to be clear, in this talk, whenever I talk about coherence, I mean coherence with respect to energy eigenbases. Just to have a very simple example in mind, you can think about a qubit system, for example, with the Hamiltonian, let's say, E sigma z, and density operator rho in this basis, then coherence means that you have the off-diagonal terms, non-zero off-diagonal terms. And larger off-diagonal terms mean higher coherence. This is just the intuition for the simplest example, which is just a qubit system. Sorry, this Hamiltonian is E sigma z, and the rho, I just said that if the rho has off-diagonal terms, non-zero off-diagonal terms, then you'll say the state has a coherence.
It's somehow accounts
for. Maybe I write it a different way. No problem. So I can raise you. This is H equal to E sigma z. This is my Hamiltonian. And what does it mean to have coherence with respect to energy eigenbases? It means that rho has off-diagonal terms for it. It's a non-zero term. They are non-zero. Perfect. So back to this picture. I mean, here is a machine for distilling coherence with respect to energy eigenbases. So the machine obtains pure coherent states at the output from mixed coherent states at the input at a non-zero rate, basically. And during this process, it can consume an arbitrary amount of work. So you supplement this machine, you give the machine an arbitrary amount of work. And so the question is that whether this hypothetical machine, which obtains pure coherent state at a non-zero rate from mixed coherent state, is it consistent with the laws of quantum mechanics and thermodynamics or not? So at the end of this talk, I will try to convince you that the answer is no, it's not consistent. So interestingly, it turns out that this question is actually equivalent or related to another question about quantum clocks. The question, which apparently may look different, but is actually exactly the same thing. So imagine a different problem. Suppose I'm given many copies of a noisy quantum clock. So the clock is noisy in the sense that it's in a mixed state, but it's approximately synchronized with a background reference clock. Here is my reference clock. And the clocks are approximately synchronized with this reference clock. Can I combine all these noisy quantum clocks with each other to obtain pure coherent clocks, pure clocks basically, at the output, such that this output clock is still synchronized with this background reference clock? And the problem here is that I don't know what's the current time according to this background reference clock. I only have access to this quantum clocks, and I want to combine them to obtain clocks which are still synchronized with this background reference clock, which I don't know what's the current time according to that. And again, the question is, this possible to do this transformation at a non-zero rate or not? Good. So I just want to pause here for a moment and emphasize that although here I will talk a lot about coherence, asymmetry, and thermodynamics, in some sense, some of the results that are obtained here could be interesting and useful outside of the resource theory, regardless of the resource theories. For example, we will obtain some new properties of quantum fission information, or we will see a simple proof of a previously known result about quantum fission information. And I think it's interesting that how this resource theoretic point of view to this problem can lead us to find new properties of new results, which can be basically useful regardless of resource theories. Good. So here's the outline of the rest of my talk. I will start by defining the framework for this distillation machine. What do I mean by a distillation machine? What's the right framework to describe it? I will consider three different definitions, which look different, but at the end I will show that they are actually all equivalent with each other. Then I will consider the problem of pure state transformation, where the input is also pure, but it's possibly different from the output state. And I will ask what's the optimal rate of transformation from pure state to pure state in this case. Then I will talk about quantum fission information, which turned out to be a relevant quantity in this context. I will show you a new property of quantum fission information, and I will use that property to give a new proof of Toast-Pest conjecture on quantum fission information, which I will later explain what's the conjecture. Then I will talk about coherence formation, which is the process where you go from pure state to mixed state. So it's basically the reverse of a distillation process. And at the end, I will talk about distillation process, where you go from mixed state to pure state, both at this many copy regime or IID regime and at the level of single copy regime. Okay, so let me start by defining what do I mean by quantum clock. For me, a quantum clock is any quantum system which has a time-dependent dynamics. As long as the state of system depends on time, then I will call it a clock. So more specifically, I will characterize my clock by a density operator denoted by rho and a Hamiltonian H. Then by definition, the state of clock is time-dependent. Which means that when I just told you that the state is rho, it means that I actually meant the state is rho at a particular time relative to a particular background reference clock. So at, for example, at t equal to zero relative to this background reference clock, then at an arbitrary time t, the state will be actually e to the minus iht rho e to the iht. So in this talk, I will talk about also n copies of a clock. By n copies of a clock with the state rho and Hamiltonian H, I basically mean an uncorrelated composite system with the state rho tensor n and with the total Hamiltonian, which is sum of the Hamiltonian of each individual system. Okay. So these are just some definitions. So in the set of clock, we usually assume the dynamics is periodic, and that's also the assumption here. But in addition to this assumption, I'm going to assume that all the clocks that I'm setting in this theory have exactly the same period. So period here is denoted by tau, which is an arbitrary number, but it's fixed throughout this theory. All clocks will have period tau. So examples, for example, could be just a two-level clock with Hamiltonian pi sigma z over tau. So I'm assuming h bar equal to 1, of course. So pi sigma z over tau with any state which is not diagonal in the energy eigenbasis. Then the period of the dynamics will be tau. Note that the period is a property of both, is determined by both state and Hamiltonian. So another example could be a Hamiltonian harmonic oscillator with frequency tau minus 1. Again, for a generic state, the period of the dynamics will be tau. Good. Now I need a framework to study manipulation of clock. What kind of transformations I can do on my quantum clocks? Well, of course, because I'm studying transformations on quantum systems and density operators, the transformation should be completely positive and trace preserving. This is just a minimum requirement that I need to satisfy. But in addition to this, I'm under this kind of restriction that I don't have access to this reference clock because I just want to study the information content of the clocks themselves about time defined by this reference clock. So I want to study what kind of operations I can do on my quantum clocks without having access to the reference clock which defines time, without knowing the current time according to this reference clock. And it turns out that the operations that you can do in this form under this restriction are all those operations that satisfy time translation symmetry, which is defined here. So I will say a quantum operation E is invariant under time translation, or time translation invariant, or TI in this talk, I will call it TI, if it satisfies this equality. If I first apply this quantum operation on my input system, and then apply a time translation, here, e to the minus hot is the ho is the Hamiltonian of the output. So I apply a time translation on the output system. Then the final state should be equal to if I first apply what I get if I first apply the time translation to my input system and then apply the quantum operation. If this equality holds for all time t and all input states sigma, then I will say my quantum operation is time translation invariant or is a TI operation. Note that, by the way, the input and output could be in general different, and that's why I use H in and H out for the input Hamiltonian and output Hamiltonian, respectively.
So what is H in and H out?
It's the Hamiltonian of the input system and output system. For example, if I am thinking about a qubit clock, then it will be just a Hamiltonian of my qubit clock. If I have two qubit clock at the input, and I want to know, can I distill one qubit clock at the output, then the input Hamiltonian will be sum of these two Hamiltonians for the two qubit clocks, and the output Hamiltonian will be just the Hamiltonian of the output qubit.
So you have some recipe to specify the
That's given to you as part of the specification of the physical system. I mean, this, I give you this physical system, it has this Hamiltonian and this state, and now the question is that what kind of transformation you can do on this system. So for example, somebody gives you this particular harmonic oscillator, they'll tell you this is the Hamiltonian, it's oscillating with this frequency, and now you are asking what kind of transformation you can do which are invariant on the time translation on that harmonic oscillator.
So the input is any copies of the Hilbert space, and the output could be a single Hamiltonian?
For this definition, it could be any Hamiltonian. You don't need to, but I'm going to actually look at n copies. And when I say n copy, I mean the total Hamiltonian is sum of the Hamiltonian of each individual system. Sure, please. I am particularly interested in that particular example, but this definition and all basically this definition is general. I am for in later when I talk about distillation, I will particularly focus on that example. Good. Are there any other questions? Good. So, so examples of these operations. So. A simple example could be an energy conserving unitary, a unitary which commutes with my Hamiltonian. But to implement such a unitary, you don't need to have access to the reference clock. You don't need to know the current time according to the reference clock. Another example could be preparing system in an incoherent state, a state which is diagonal in the energy eigenbasis. Again, to prepare those kind of states, you don't need to have access to the, you don't need to know the current time according to the reference clock. Okay, so basically I defined what do I mean by quantum clock distillation. So I'm given this copies of quantum clocks and I want to apply an arbitrary TI operation. So the point is that under this restriction that I don't know the current time according to this clock, I can do an arbitrary TI transformation and I can't do anything else. So the question is that using this limitation, this restriction that my operations should satisfy that symmetry property, can I transform many copies of mixed state quantum clocks to pure state quantum clocks or not. I will define more carefully about epsilon deltas, in what sense the transformation should be satisfied, but this is the intuition. So you want basically that in the limit where n, the number of copies goes to infinity, the error goes to zero. Good. Now let's think about a different problem, or a problem which may look different, is just coherence distillation. So in this context, you want to basically think about a thermal machine here that is receiving this input and it consumes some work and distills output states which contain coherence. Okay? So as I said, I mean, this problem may sound different, but it's exactly equivalent. But so let's try to formalize this problem. What do I mean by a thermal machine? So one way to formalize the intuition about the thermal machine is to use the standard resource theory of quantum thermodynamics or athermality and the notion of thermal operations. In this framework, in this resource theory, a thermal machine is modeled by thermal operations. What is a thermal operation? A thermal operation is any transformation that I can do on my system by coupling it to a thermal bath via an energy conserving unitary. So you implement an energy conserving unitary on the system and thermal bath. You bring a thermal bath close to your system, or you apply this unitary which conserves the total Hamiltonian, and do you ask what is the total effect on my system when I trace over thermal baths, for example. So this will be a model for how you can think about thermal machines in general. And so it turns out that under this set of transformations, work or equivalent to free energy and coherence are two distinct resources, meaning that first of all, I cannot generate them using thermal operations. If I start with a state which doesn't contain coherence, for example, you cannot create a state which contains coherence, or you cannot interconvert them. They are independent resources. And now you can ask, what happens if I give my system, my thermal machine, which is modeled now by a thermal operation, an arbitrary amount of work? I can model by work or battery by a system which is in an energy eigenstate. So I bring another system which is in an energy eigenstate, and I couple it to my system and thermal bath by a unitary which commutes with the total Hamiltonian of this three system. What kind of operation now I can do on this system using this extra resource? It turns out that the only operation that you can do on your system is T TI operation. You can only perform TI operations. And remember, TI operations are operations which satisfy that time translation symmetry. And furthermore, you cannot do anything more. I mean, these are the only operations, and you can do all of them. Good. So this result, by the way, is somehow follows from this other result, which I call it covariant sine spring dilation theorem, which is basically an extension of sine spring dilation theorem. It says any map which satisfies that symmetry can be implemented by coupling your system to an energy eigenstate by an energy conserving unitary. You can think of it as extension of sine spring dilation theorem.
You don't really need the bath.
Exactly. You don't need to if you are given an arbitrary amount of energy. That's a good point. Good. Okay. So we saw that we started with a problem which looks different, the problem of coherence distillation, where you have a thermal machine that consumes work and you want to distill coherence. But at the end, if you try to formalize this, at least in the context of quantum resource theory of thermodynamics, you're back to the notion of arbitrary TI operation. So again, you see that the only operations that I can do is an arbitrary TI operation. Good. But now, in this argument, I somehow relied on the on this structure of the resource theory of ethermality or quantum thermodynamics. And so later on, when I prove a no-go theorem, I prove that coherence distillation is not possible, it may sound that somehow this no-go theorem depends on this assumption that I started with this in this particular framework. Now you may say, okay, maybe if I go beyond this framework, then I can do operations, I can distill coherence. I can distill coherence if you go beyond the notion of thermal operations. So let's think about it. I want to argue that this is not actually the case. The result actually does not rely on this resource theory of quantum thermodynamics. So I want to go beyond thermal operations. Let's think about the most general set of operations that I can do inside my machine for coherence distillation. What is the most natural general set of operations that I can do in this box? Well, you can say at least a minimum requirement for a distillation machine is that the machine itself should not generate coherence, because otherwise you cannot interpret the process as distillation process, because there's no way to say that the coherence that you observe at the output, is it generated by the machine itself, or is it generated, or is it coming from the input system? So this is a minimum requirement that you need to satisfy. You can relax thermal notion of thermal operations, but at least you want to keep this notion. So let's try to formalize this, the idea of operations which do not generate coherence themselves. How we can formalize them, formalize it? Well, one way to formalize this notion is based on the idea that I call it completely incoherence preserving operations. The word here, completely here, is used to remind you how the set of completely positive operations are distinguished from the set of positive operations. So I would say map E is completely incoherence preserving if it maps incoherent input states to incoherent output states, even if my closed system S is entangled with another closed system A, and their state is initially entangled but in an incoherent state. So incoherent state of SA should be mapped to an incoherent state of SA. So you say, okay, at least my map should satisfy this property to guarantee that it's not generating coherence itself. And then if you study this map, it turns out that interestingly, a map is completely incoherence preserving if and only if it's TI. So again, somehow we are back in the notion of TI operation. So TI, one direction is basically very easy to see. If the map is TI, then it's easy to see that it's not, it cannot generate coherence. But the other side is also not hard to show, that if this map for all inputs mapping incoherent state to incoherent state should be TI. Good. Now,
what is the incoherent state of SA?
Well, for any system,
you can say total.
Exactly. For any system, you think about total Hamiltonian, then you ask whether I am diagonal with respect to the total Hamiltonian or not.
And then you do something to S.
And then you are asking whether the total system is still incoherent with respect to total Hamiltonian or not. And this turns out to be a stronger constraint if you do not allow this ancillary system. You get basically a weaker constraint. There are maps which are mapping incoherent state on a single system to incoherent state on that system, but when you look at the purification, you see that it's generating coherence.
When you say TI operations, what do you what's the
TI operation is defined here.
Sure. So what's the Hamiltonian you approach that for TI operation?
Well,
okay.
So the point is that, when I talk about system, I talk about the state and Hamiltonian. So the Hamiltonian is defined, is given to me. So now for any system, input system and output system, Hamiltonians are given to me, and now I can check for any given operation. Does it satisfy this condition or not?
So incoherent state is defined with respect to this H total, which is HS plus HM.
Yeah.
Then TI definition doesn't depend on this H total, or?
No, TI also depends on,
yes.
Well, TI, so, oh, I see. So TI here is defined, so the point is that that's actually the non-trivial part of the theorem. So you can just think about this system and you can define TI based on just this system.
TI is only for HS.
Yes.
So this statement does not depend on for any ancillary system.
For any ancillary system and for any Hamiltonian of the ancillary system. Pick an arbitrary Hamiltonian and pick a state, initial state, which is incoherent with respect to the total Hamiltonian, and then look what would be the output. Is it incoherent or not? If it's incoherent always for all initial states and all Hamiltonian of HA, then you can prove that it should be, the operation itself should be TI.
What's the meaning of having ancillary in this definition?
Well, it's very similar to. So it's very similar to how, again, completely positive operations are distinguished from positive operations. Why do you need ancilla? I mean, it reveals something about the operations that you are doing on your system.
In case of complete positivity, we know we don't have to talk about ancillas of arbitrary dimension.
Yes.
Dimension d squared. Is there anything analogous here where we can get away by considering a sub?
Exactly. The same here. You only need to actually look at just one particular set with one particular Hamiltonian of HA. And that's sufficient to check basically whether this condition is satisfied or not. But you need entanglement.
It has to have, presumably, dimension
equal
to this.
Yes.
Is this not trivial because there's incoherence? Is that you still have entanglement? Is that,
sorry?
I guess there's incoherent states that can have entanglement.
Yes, of course.
So,
exactly. Because then I have, let's say, two sigma. This system has a Hamiltonian sigma z. This system has a Hamiltonian sigma z. Now, think about the sector with total energy one.
Right. So
you have a degeneracy. Z, if this is in state zero, this is in state one. Or if this is in state one and this is in state zero, then
degeneracy.
If the total Hamiltonian has degeneracy, then you can allow entangled states which are entangled between the two systems, and Well, I said with respect to energy eigenbases.
Yeah,
sure. I mean. If I, does it, well, one way to define it, does it commute with the total Hamiltonian or not?
I guess it corresponds to having off diagonal elements relative to the block forms.
Yes.
Off block diagonal elements.
So it's still allows the entanglement. So an entanglement is allowing.
Yes, exactly. Are there any other question? Good. Okay, so you saw, I started with this hope that maybe I can go beyond thermal operations. I don't want to restrict myself to the notion of thermal operations, the resource theory of quantum thermodynamics. Let's go beyond. And then I tried to formalize this intuition, how I can go beyond, at least I want my transformation to be coherence non-generating. And then when I try to formalize this intuition, then I came back to the notion of arbitrary TI operation. So basically, I couldn't go beyond this. So this is basically the most general natural set of operations that I can consider for the task of coherence distillation. And this is basically the assumption here. So from now on, I'm going to assume that the transformation here is an arbitrary TI operation. So basically, to summarize what I told you in the last 10 minutes, is that there are three different ways to define exactly the same notion of operation. The set of TI operations can be defined in terms of invariance under time translations. They can be defined in terms of this covariance of sine spring dilation in the sense that you couple your system to an energy eigenstate by an energy conserving unitary. Or they can be defined in terms of completely incoherence preserving, property of being completely incoherence preserving. So you see, I mean, they look very different, but they all give you exactly the same set of operations. And that's basically explain why the variety of these definitions, explain why this set of operations arises in many different contexts, why it's physically useful and relevant in many different contexts, physical contexts. So as I said, from now on, I'm going to restrict myself to this set of operations, and now I'm going to prove some results under this assumption that I'm doing arbitrary TI operation. So I want to start with a simpler problem, which is the problem of pure state to pure state transformations, where the inputs are also pure. And so it turns out that in this case, the problem simplifies a lot. There is basically one important quantity here, which is the energy variance of the system defined by, given here, determines everything, the rate of transformation, et cetera. In particular, you can show that if the input system has state psi 1 and Hamiltonian H1, and the output system has a state psi 2 and Hamiltonian H2, and assume they have the same period. Remember that I'm here in this framework, I'm always thinking about interconversion between the systems which have exactly the same period. So if they have the same period, then the optimal rate of transformation is given by the ratio of the energy variance of system 1 to the energy variance of system 2. That gives me the optimal rate of transformation. Okay? So to basically, to compare with entanglement theory, in entanglement theory you would say for bipartite pure entangled state, the rate of the optimal rate of transformation is given by the ratio of the entanglement entropy for the input state to entanglement entropy for the output state. And that's basically why entanglement entropy is relevant quantity. That's the operational meaning of entanglement entropy. So more precisely, this statement, this theorem means that for any rate less than this ratio, this optimal rate, then you can transform many n copies of psi 1 to approximately n copies of psi 2, r n copies of psi 2, with an error epsilon, where error here is, for example, quantified in trace distance, L1 norm, such that as n goes to infinity, this error vanishes. Error goes to here. On the other hand, for any rate larger than this, there is no way to transform, implement this transformation with a vanishing error. And this is based on the earlier results of Shuk, Versace, Sirak, and Gilad, Gore, and Rob Spiggins. But the convergence in L1 norm and the converse bound is proven in this recent paper.
Can you clarify what you mean by period depending on the state? You said like these systems have to have the same period.
Yeah.
Earlier in the talk, you said that the period is dependent on the Hamiltonian state.
Right. So for example, if you think about harmonic oscillator with frequency with frequency tau minus 1, it can have states which are have period tau, but it can also have states which have period tau over 2, like half or any tau over k for any k. If instead of 0 plus 1, for example, a C0 plus 1 has period tau, but 0 plus 2 has period tau over 2. Good. So this is this is a very nice, simple picture. It tells that, first of all, the optimal rate of transformation from system 1 to system 2 is exactly the inverse of the rate of transformation from system 2 to system 1, just because of this. The optimal rate of transformation is given by this ratio. And so, in other words, the theory is reversible in this sense. So it means that in the IID regime or in the many-copy regime, all oscillators with the same frequency in pure states are equivalent resources, meaning that by adding or absorbing sufficient amount of energy, their coherence content or equivalent to their information content about time can be converted from one form to another in a reversible fashion. So we have this nice picture. This also means that if you now think about the transformation from a different system, let's say a system with possibly a mixed state, to this, for example, system, if you find the optimal rate of transformation from this system to this system, then you also know what's the optimal rate of transformation from this system to this system. So, because, I mean, this is just a standard kind of arguments in all resource theories and thermodynamics. Because the transformations are reversible, the optimal rate, you can just find the optimal rate relative to one of those states, and you can call that a state as your standard state or currency, basically. So in this context, I will call it the C bit for clock bit or coherence bit. So my C bit is a convenient choice. It can be any system. A convenient choice will be this qubit system with a state 0 plus 1 and with the Hamiltonian pi sigma z over tau. So note that this standard has system or C bit has period tau. So and it's important that I'm choosing my standard system with particular period. So for any period, you can define a standard system with that period. And then for this one, energy variance is pi squared over tau squared. And then the rate of transformation from psi to this standard bit, to my standard C bit will be tau squared times VH of psi divided by pi squared. So the rate of transformation to my currency or C bit, it will be given by the energy variance. Now, so you see in this picture, we saw that energy variance is the most important quantity, and it determines everything. So you can ask, what's the physical significance of energy variance? Why is such an important quantity?
So psi could be a state, so that it has a period of some arbitrary Hamiltonian IP. So H, I can view H bit as H1, and then this H bit state as psi 1.
Yes.
And then I can pick any psi 2, and then H2 could be anything. And then I just need to make sure that the period
is tau. Exactly. Yeah. Then you can go from one to the other by the rate. So here I was free to choose any basically a standard. It's just a currency that you choose, and I choose this one just for convenience, but you can choose anything
also. So any quantum state should eventually come back to the original state, right? And then, so by changing the norm of the coefficient in front of the Hamiltonian, I can tune the period.
Yes, but that norm has a physical meaning. Like it.
So that changes the lines, changes the rate.
That changes. Well, it turns out that actually this is a good question. I used to think that you can do transformation from systems with different period in the IID regime. Maybe by adding some catalyst or ancillary that use, you know, just to change the period, and then, but it turns out that this notion of convergence in L1 norm doesn't hold. Like catalyst, you can change the period just using catalysts, the period has a real meaning, and it's you cannot interconvert system with different. Good. So now let's think about. This question, what is the physical significance of energy variance? It turns out that there are, well, different ways to interpret energy variance, but the reasonable interpretation in this context could be in terms of the notion of quantum fission information. So let me quickly remind you what is quantum fission information. For this family of a state, e to the minus iht rho e to the iht, the quantum fission information for this family is given by this formula, where pj and pk are just the eigenvalues of rho, and psi j and psi k are the corresponding eigenvectors. You can also think about quantum fission information as the secondary or minus second derivative of the fidelity between rho and e to the minus iht rho to iht, the time evolved version of rho at t equal to 0. The first derivative is 0, and the second derivative is just the quantum fission information. The quantum fission information is just the most relevant quantity in quantum metrology and estimation. In particular, it satisfies this Kramer-Rao bound. But it has many other nice properties. In particular, it's a faithful in the sense that it's zero if and only if a state is incoherent or diagonal in the energy eigenvectors. It's monotone under TI operation. If I apply an arbitrary TI operation on rho, then its quantum fission information should be less than or equal to its quantum fission information of rho. So it's additive for composite non-interacting system with uncorrelated states. So if I look at a state rho 1 tensor rho 2, which is uncorrelated, with the Hamiltonian, which is also sum of the Hamiltonian of the two systems, so they are non-interacting with each other, then the total fission information will be sum of the fission information. And finally, it's convex. Incidentally, any function which is zero, which is monotone under TI operations and vanishes under incoherent states, it's called a measure of asymmetry. So basically, quantum fission information is a measure of asymmetry relative to time translation symmetry. This is an example of measures of asymmetry. Now, let's go back to our problem of pure state transformation to pure state transformation. So it turns out that in the case of pure state, quantum machine information is actually equal to energy variance. It's just four times energy variance. And so it suggests that there is a very simple interpretation of this result. It says that this result basically means that you can go from any pure state or any system in a pure state to another system in a pure state as long as you have not increased the total quantum fission information. Remember that quantum fission information is linear. So roughly speaking, it means that as long as you have not increased the total quantum fission information, then transformation is possible. And I mean, this is a nice interpretation, but if you want to take it seriously, you want to make sure that it also is true for for mixed states. At least you might, I mean, you may conjecture, this conjecture sounds very reasonable, that the rate of transformation for general system is determined by the ratio of their quantum fission information. If I just replace this by a mixed state or this by a mixed state, again, the rate is given by the ratio of their quantum fission information. And this is what I thought at the beginning that it should be true. So I was trying to prove this conjecture. And turns out that actually the conjecture is partially correct. So let's think about coherence formation process, where I want to go from pure state to mixed state. But before thinking about the IID regime, I want to think about a simpler problem, actually. I want to think about the cost of preparing a mixed state, a system S with Hamiltonian HS in a mixed state. One way to prepare a system S with Hamiltonian, a closed system S with Hamiltonian HS in a state row, is to prepare a purification of this state. I purify it with another closed system, here A, and then basically, first prepare this purification, and then I throw away the purification. I trace over the purification. So in particular here, I define this set, pure set phi rho, which is the purification of rho. Then I trace over A, I get back rho. And both systems are closed. So HS and HA. Now, I want to think about all such purifications and all Hamiltonian of HA. Here, both Hamiltonian of HA and the purification is arbitrary. And I want to think about the minimum energy variance, the energy variance of this pure state, and I want to basically think about the minimum energy variance that I can achieve by varying over all possible HA and all possible purification. What's the minimum of energy variance of this purification, given that I can vary over all purifications of rho and all Hamiltonian of HA? Why I'm interested in this quantity? Because I just show you, I mean, the cost of preparing a particular pure state is just determined by energy variance. So this basically tells me that what is the cost of preparing this mixed state if you want to do it in this way.
I don't understand this sentence. So what does it mean by the minimal variance of the purifying state with respect to the total quantum?
Well, I have, I choose an HA for this purifying system, which has a Hamiltonian. And it has a state, it's purified, which purifies rho. Now you can ask, what is the energy variance for this state? Energy variance, with respect to this total Hamiltonian, right? So you calculate what is the energy variance with respect to this total Hamiltonian, and now you ask, I want to minimize over all purifying systems and over all states of A, Hamiltonian of A, and you want to ask, what is this minimum, basically? So if you, I mean, it turns out that you can actually solve this minimization problem. It's not hard. And it turns out that when the answer is basically just quantum fission information. So in other words, quantum fission information tells you what is the cost of preparing the state in this particular form, if you want to prepare the purification of the state. Incidentally, because for pure state, I just told you that variance here is also proportional to quantum fission information. So another way to phrase this result is, another way to phrase this result is that I can find a state whose quantum fission, I can find a pure state for the joint system and a Hamiltonian for system A such that the quantum fission information for the total system, the joint system, is exactly equal to the quantum fission information for this reduced system. Good. So, and I think this is interesting because it means that you start with a pure state, you basically trace over A or you discard A, and still you find that your fission information has not decreased, even though it turns out that the system A itself carries a non-zero quantum fission information. So even though you can calculate and show that A is carrying some non-zero quantum fission information, the quantum fission information has not decreased by discard. And this has an interesting consequences. I want to discuss quickly a corollary of this result, basically. Is the result clear to everybody?
So is that consistent with the additivity property?
Well, additivity property, that's a good question. Additivity property, there were two assumptions there. The Hamiltonian is should be additive, which is the case here, and the state should be uncorrelated, which or product, which is not the case here. But you're right, I mean, it's in, on the, at least on the surface, it looks that it's kind of inconsistent with that additivity. Good. Yeah, just explain this. So I want to quickly talk about the corollary of this result. So this is a conjecture by Toews and Pitts. And the conjecture basically, formally says Q of quantum efficient information is the convex roof of variance. So let me explain what the conjecture means. For any given density operator rho, think about all all ensembles of pure states whose average is equal to rho. Think about all of those ensemble of pure states. And for each ensemble, find the average of energy variance. And this, their conjecture, Toews and Pitts conjecture, is that when you minimize over all such ensembles, the minimum is equal to the energy to the quantum efficient information of a state row. So this is a property of quantum efficient information. And this was first proven by Yu in 2013. Pitts and Toews prove it in special cases, but then later it's proven by Yu. The proof, you look at the proof, it's very complicated. It's not clear what's happening in the proof. And here, basically, I want to show you a very simple proof which follows from the result that I showed in the previous slide. By the way, notice that this property, so just the fact that the quantum efficient information is convex implies that quantum efficient information of rho should be less than or equal to the quantum efficient information of this ensemble, just because the average of the ensemble is equal to rho, and we know that the quantum efficient information is convex. So the non-trivial statement here is that there exists a set of pure states, an ensemble of pure states for which this holds as equality. And that's the conjecture by Toews and Pitts, and I want to just show you a very simple proof. This is the only slide that I try to prove something, so you can skip this slide if you don't like proofs. So let me remind you the result that I showed in the previous slide. I showed you that if for any state row, for any system with the state row and Hamiltonian HS, here state row, I can find a purification of that state and a Hamiltonian HA such that the quantum efficient information for the total system is exactly equal to the quantum efficient information for system. So this is the quantum efficient information for the total system and the purification is equal to the quantum efficient information of rho. Okay. Think about these two states, they have exactly the same quantum efficient information. One is pure, the other is mixed. Now I want to think about the third state. I call it sigma SA here. This is the state that is obtained by measuring A in the energy eigenbasis and just ignoring the outcome of the measurement. So the state that you obtain in this way will be something in this form, some pk, some pure states on system S, tensor ek, where e are eigenstates of this Hamiltonian HA. So you found this Hamiltonian for which the equality holds, and then you measure in that Hamiltonian basis. Now, my claim is that if you think about the quantum efficient information of this system, it should be between quantum efficient information of phi rho and rho. Why is that? First of all, notice that I can go from phi rho, the pure state, to sigma by a measurement over A. And it's not an arbitrary measurement, it's a measurement on energy in energy eigenbasis. And you can easily show that a measurement in the energy eigenbasis is a TI operation. So it doesn't increase quantum efficient information. As I go from here to here, quantum efficient information is not increased. On the other hand, I can go from sigma SA to rho just by tracing over A. And again, this process is a TI operation. And so again, in this process, when I go from sigma SA to rho, quantum efficient information is not increased. So I conclude that the quantum efficient information of this state should be between the quantum efficient information of these two states, which are equal. So the quantum efficient information of this state should be also equal to quantum efficient information of rho. But now, if you think about the form of this state, it has a very particular form. These are energy eigenstates, so it turns out that they do not contribute in the quantum efficient information at all. And these are pure states, so basically, if you calculate the quantum efficient information for this, it's basically the average of quantum efficient information of these pure states. And so basically, we found that there exists a set of pure states, eta k's, whose average of quantum machine information is equal to the quantum machine information of rho. And this was exactly tau space conjecture. And so this is basically a new proof of the tau space conjecture. Good. Now I want to think about a formation process. I want to use this result to study the formation process. So the formation, remember, is the process where I go from pure state to mixed state. So I define the, basically the, this is the coherence cost. The cost of preparing rho, the density of mixed state rho here, from pure state as the minimum rate of standard bits that I need to consume so that I prepare n copies of rho. So how many bits I need to consume, how many standard pure states I need to consume to prepare n copies of this, I want to minimize over that rate, but find the minimum cost, such that as n goes to infinity, error vanishes in the limit where error, for example, is measured in trace system. And then, so you can prove that, again, this coherence cost is given by the ratio of the quantum fission information for this desired output state, the quantum fission information for the input state. So coherence cost is this ratio. So for a system with period tau, it will be tau over 2 pi squared times quantum fission information for rho. So you can say this is basically an operational interpretation of quantum fission information. What is the operational interpretation? It's just how much coherence in the form of pure c-bits you need to consume to prepare the state. So it turns out that this result does not follow from the purification result that I showed you for a simple reason, which is not hard to explain. Because in my purification, I needed to add an ancillary system, and that can change the period. But here, I need to be careful about the period when I think about the transformation between systems. So the proof is more complicated, basically. So, but I can prove the result using the Tau-Spitz U theorem that I just proved it to you, plus some standard typicality arguments that are used, for example, in entanglement theory or other theories. And then you can prove that coherence cost should be less than or equal to this ratio, the ratio of quantum fission information for the state and quantum fission information for your sense qubit. And you can also prove a lower bound that if basically this the other direction also holds. In general, you can show that if you can go from rho, Rn copies of rho to sigma tensor n approximately, then the rate R should be larger than or equal to this ratio, the quantum fission information for the output, the quantum fission information for the input. Note that this doesn't follow from the additivity of quantum fission information or monotonicity. This is a non-trivial result because here we are not looking at per exact transformation. We are looking to approximate transformation, and technically it turns out that quantum fission information is not asymptotically continuous. So allowing that error caused a lot of problems in the proofs, but you can at the end overcome. So to summarize, it turns out that the coherence cost is basically just the ratio of these two questions.
Yes, so you said it's not asymptotically continuous, so that doesn't mean that in the ID limit you don't get a single letter formula?
Well, at the end we get a single letter. It's an obstacle, that kind of issue, that would be an obstacle for proving, but in this case it turns out that you can overcome that obstacle. So the idea is that if I have a system with a large Hamiltonian, if you add an epsilon error in, let's say, a high energy states, if I change my state by an epsilon in energy eigenstates which have high energy, then, well, the trace systems have changed only by epsilon, but the energy variance can change by epsilon times n squared, where n is just the total energy. So energy variance can change a lot. And this is an issue in all these proofs that you need to take care of it and make it more complicated.
OK, how do you actually theorem tell anything about how to
Here I'm talking about IID system, but are you talking about this theorem?
Yes.
Yeah, this theorem, I find the explicit, I haven't written here, but I can find the explicit formula for HA. Well, a very natural first conjecture will be to choose HA to be just minus HS. And then you, but it's not okay. I mean, it doesn't give you the optimal.
Uh-huh.
Right. You can go lower than that by choosing a more clever. Yeah.
Which really depends on the state.
Exactly. It really depends on the state. But see, for example, if rho commutes with HS, yeah, if rho commutes with HS, then you can just choose HA to be minus HS.
If I pick some typical state, then still minus HS works.
I haven't looked at that. Maybe with high probability works. I don't know. Good question. I mean, yeah. OK. Other questions? So basically, the conclusion was that I found an operational interpretation of quantum Fisher information. It's the rate of going, what's the cost of preparing a general mixed state in the IID regime from this standard pure state. Now, let's go and look at the problem of coherence distillation, where I want to go from mixed state to pure state. Let's say this problem. And again, a natural conjecture or assumption here is that quantum Fisher information should give us this ratio. What's the rate of optimal rate of transformation? But it turns out that that's actually not correct. There are other relevant quantities in this context. So I define this new quantity, which I call it purity of coherence, and I will use it to argue that why you cannot do coherence distillation. Good. So I define purity of coherence for a state rho, for a system with a state rho and Hamiltonian H via this formula. It's trace of H rho squared, H rho minus 1 minus trace of rho H squared. And so if you, you can also rewrite this formula in this way. Here pk and pj are eigenvalues of a rho, and psi j and psi k are the corresponding eigenvectors. So this is a definition. This definition works if rho is has a full rank. In general, if rho does not have full rank, but this condition is satisfied, H rho H is inside rho, then still you can apply the formula. But in general, if this condition is not satisfied, you assume this quantity is infinite. How do I find this quantity? This is just basically the second derivative of the Petz relative Rényi entropy for alpha equal to 2. If you look at that quantity and look at the second derivative of Rényi entropy for alpha equal to 2, you find this quantity.
How do you differentiate this?
I remember how quantum Fisher information is related to second derivative of fidelity. You look at rho and time evolved version of rho. You look at the here relative Rényi entropy and look at the second derivative, basically, of that function at t equal to 0. You get this formula. And it turns out that similar to quantum Fisher information, it has all these nice properties. It's faithful, it's monotone under TI operations, it's additive for composite non-interacting systems with uncorrelated states, and it's convex. But unlike quantum Fisher information, it has a drastically different behavior on pure states. For pure states, quantum Fisher information reduces to the energy variance, as we just saw. But this quantity, the purity of coherence, is infinite. It's always infinite, unless your state is an energy eigenstate. So basically, this is a quantity which is either zero or infinite, and for pure states. And so, at least on the surface, it doesn't look very useful. So if you think about this comparison with quantum Fisher information more closely, it's actually interesting when you start comparing it with quantum Fisher information. So I've given the formulas here for purity of coherence and quantum Fisher information. First of all, you can show that for any state rho, purity of coherence is larger than or equal to quantum Fisher information. Furthermore, if you think about the case of qubits, you find this very simple formula. Purity of coherence of rho is equal to the quantum Fisher information divided by 2, 1 minus trace of rho squared. So this basically means that as the state becomes more mixed, it gets closer and closer to the totally mixed state, this ratio in the denominator goes to 1, and so purity of coherence becomes almost equal to the quantum Fisher information. So in the opposite limit, where trace of rho squared is going to 1, then the denominator vanishes, and basically purity of coherence diverges. So this is for qubits, this simple formula. But it turns out it's generally true for any arbitrary system. We can show that the ratio of the purity of coherence to quantum Fisher information is 1 plus over epsilon in the limit where rho is epsilon close in the trace distance to totally mixed state. And in the opposite limit, as you get to close to a pure state, purity of coherence is lower bounded by the quantum Fisher information for psi max. Here psi max is a state with the maximum eigenvalue, and Pmax is the corresponding eigen is the corresponding eigenvalue. So again, you see as Psimax as the sigil becomes closer to Psimax, it's become a pure state, Pmax goes to one, and so this diverges basically. So in two limits, in the limit where I go to the very close to the total mixed state, the ratio goes to one. In the opposite limit where I'm very close to a pure state, this diverges. Sorry. Okay. So roughly speaking, based on this intuition, you can say purity of coherence is the ratio of quantum Fisher information to one minus purity. Just think about this. So, I mean, this is just loosely speaking true. Quantum purity of coherence you can think of is as this ratio. And this is basically means higher purity of coherence means more pure coherence, and that justifies this name. I want to use this analogy with thermodynamics. In some sense, you can argue that the relation between quantum Fisher information and purity of coherence is analogous to the relation between total energy and free energy. So what's the difference between total energy and free energy in thermodynamics? Well, total energy, free energy doesn't care about the, cares about the difference between ordered energy and disordered energy. It cares about the difference between work and heat. On the other hand, total energy doesn't care. It's just the total energy. Similarly, quantum Fisher purity of coherence cares about the difference between coherence in pure states versus mixed state. But from the point of view of quantum Fisher information, it's just the total coherence. It doesn't care about the difference between these two. Good. So this is, I'm almost at the end of the talk. So let me now talk about coherence distillation briefly. So you can define distillable coherence as the optimal rate that you can distill this standard CBIT from rho in copies of this mixed state. What's the maximum rate that you can distill this standard CBIT such that in the limit n goes to infinity, the error vanishes? And then here is the main theorem basically. For any state with bounded purity of coherence, the distillable coherence with respect to TI operation is zero. In other words, if pH of rho is finite, then this distillation distillable coherence is zero. And furthermore, you can argue that for bounded Hamiltonians, purity of coherence is finite if and only if pi rho commutes with H, where pi rho is the projector to the support of rho. So if the projector is support of rho commutes with H, then pH of rho is finite, and then this level coherence is zero. So in particular, if my state is full rank, has full rank, which is the case for typical state, then what's the pi rho? Then there will be just identity operator and commutes with H, so this will be a finite, and this level coherence is zero. So basically, I argue that coherence distillation machines are impossible for generic states. And, or saying in a different way, we cannot distill coherence with operations which do not generate coherence themselves. I can very briefly tell you what's the argument here. So suppose I can go from n copies of rho to rn copies of the CBITs such that error vanishes in the limit n goes to infinity, with a rate larger than R. Suppose this is possible. Then what's the problem? The problem is, think about the quantum Fisher information for this output state. This is not the rigorous argument, this is just the intuition. So think about the quantum Fisher information for the output state. Well, we know that quantum Fisher information increases linearly with n because of additivity. At the same time, its purity also increases in the limit. We know that it's just a pure state. It's just n copies of rn copies of a pure state. And we saw that, roughly speaking, purity of coherence is the ratio of quantum Fisher information to 1 minus purity, which means that, roughly speaking, purity of coherence should increase faster than linear in n, because this is increasing with linear in n, and this is goes to 1, so it should the denominator vanishes, and so the ratio grows faster than linear in n. Now, using the additivity of purity of, now think about the input. From the input, I know that from the additivity of purity of coherence, the total purity of coherence at the input is n times pH of rho. And the purity of coherence is non-increasing under TI operation. So at the input, it's increasing linearly. At the output, it should be faster than linear. And you see the contradiction. It's possible only if r equal to 0, rate is 0, or the purity of coherence of the input is infinite, which is the case, for example, for pure states which contain coherence. Good. So I skipped this slide, which is about this part, which is about coherence distillation in the single copy regime. Again, it turns out that the purity of coherence gives you a tight bound on coherence distillation in the single copy regime. And I can relate it to this older result by Sirac, Eckert, Machiavello, and optimal purification of single qubits. I skipped this slide unless, I mean, if there are questions, I can address this later. And this is the summary of my talk. Basically, we saw three equivalent definitions of the set of TI operations. We can define them in terms of invariance on time translations, can define them in terms of completely incoherence preserving operations and covariant assigned spring dilation. And in particular, we saw that if we give a thermal machine, a thermal operation, an arbitrary amount of work, you can implement an arbitrary TI operation, and that's all you can do. Then we I proved this result that QFI is the minimum energy variance of purifying a state with an auxiliary closed system. And I use that to give a simple proof of closed space conjecture. And then I show you an operational interpretation of coherence, QFI as coherence cuts. We also saw that basically this unreachability of pure coherence states from mixed state in both single shot, we didn't see the single shot, but at synthetic regimes. And in some precise sense, you can argue that the coherence content of a single qubit can be arbitrarily large. And purity of coherence gives a tight bound on coherence distillation in the single shot regime. We cannot distill coherence with operations which do not generate coherence themselves. And I think the fact that this fact that in thermodynamics you have these two quantities, free and energy and total energies, which are both additive and monotone, have lots of interesting consequences. But similarly, I expect that this fact that you have this kind of two different additive quantities in here, purity of coherence and QFI with drastically different behavior, can have interesting consequences. Thank you for your attention.
Analysis generalizes to other continuous groups?
Well, that's a good question. Well, some of the results are, look, if coherence distillation is not possible in the case of group U1, then it's also not possible in the case of group SU2, right? Yeah, because U1 is, so it's, SU2 is a stronger constraint. The other side is interesting, like a formation result. We saw that we can go from pure state to mixed state at a rate which is given by quantum Bichet formation. And I don't know how that result worked for general SU2, for example, or general group.
Is there analog of the Bichet formation for general groups?
Well, you can, yeah, there is a covariance matrix, or you can also say that quantum Bichet formation for different generators should be satisfy this ratio. In fact, even in the case of pure state to pure state transformation, we still don't have a proof that there exists a covariant operation which gives the transformation with the ratio determined by the variance. We left that problem open.
The ratio of covariance matrices.
Right. Yes, yes.
The constraint on periods, that's what we previously described as the input and output states having the same symmetry subgroup.
Yes, exactly.
Nothing really changing. It's just in the case of time translations, you can describe that as having the same period.
Exactly. The point is that it has a nice physical interpretation. Yeah. So,
in the general case, you might have to say
exactly.
You have the same symmetry.
Exactly. By the way, I believe, I don't know if you have thought about this, but I believe that you can go from, for example, many copies of 0 plus 1 to many copies of 0 plus 2 reversibly if you allow a finite catalyst. Why? Because, I mean, if you have, if you think about the peak energy picture, I mean, how the energy distribution is, something almost like a variant, like a Gaussian, and so, but for 0 plus 2, you get Gaussian over even. For 0 plus 1, you get Gaussian over everything. And so maybe you can shift them, just by adding a variance, by adding a catalyst, which breaks the symmetry, basically. I tried to prove it. at the end I did some calculation and I found that actually the convergence doesn't happen. And then I found the reason that why the convergence doesn't happen. The convergence doesn't happen in the L1 norm, basically. There's a good reason that why it doesn't happen.
So that's a proof that you can't interconvert between states that have different symmetries even with the catalyst?
Yeah, you can change the... using catalyst, you can change the period in the IID regime, basically.
Just it doesn't converge in one norm, it doesn't converge.
No, because...
It's not depending on the choice of
norm. No, I mean, all the other results here that I showed you, convergence where was in, the convergence was in L1 norm or fidelity. So I'm saying the same notion of convergence doesn't hold in that.
Actually, related to this, I was thinking whether the fact that you mentioned that the quantum Fisher information is not asymptotically continuous, whether it suggests that maybe a different notion of a metric or a pseudometric in the definition of the coherent information would be more suitable. Because you give this example, and you can change the energy by a lot by just actually small change in the train distance, for example. So wouldn't a metric which would like account for the energy of the state
make more sense? Yeah, that's a reasonable conjecture. But now, based on this result, we know that at the end, I mean, if your state has that epsilon, which has increased its quantum Fisher information a lot, so let's say the system, each copy of the system lives in a large Hilbert space, right? You know, with a large Hamiltonian. Now, based on this result, we know that if you add that epsilon, then you need to pay for that, right? Because this is the optimal rate.
I didn't follow the analogy you made between pure coherence, quantum Fisher information, and free energy.
Yeah, it's not a very strong analogy, it's just...
You went through it pretty quickly, and I couldn't quite parse what you're saying. Can you go back and say...
Sure. Well, the analogy is based basically on this formula. So, first of all, for qubits, I have this formula, which is quantum Fisher information, purity of coherence is the ratio of quantum Fisher information divided by 2, 1 minus trace of rho squared. Okay. So, and trace of rho squared is purity. And I argue that the same kind of behavior holds for general, not exact formula, but the same behavior holds for arbitrary system, not necessarily qubits. And then basically, just loosely speaking, this formula means that purity of coherence is the ratio of QFI divided by 1 minus purity. This is the intuition. So purity of coherence depends on both QFI and 1 and purity. So in a way, this, to me, it sounds a bit like how free energy depends on both total energy and entropy. So it can distinguish between having energy in a form of ordered energy and energy in the disordered or heat. And QFI doesn't care. QFI is just the total energy. It's like the total energy, in this case, the total coherence. So this is just the main intuition. So I want to use this and this with the the formula, compare it with the formula that quantum Fisher information is E minus TS, and use that analogy. They are both additive measures of resource. This one looks on both purity and quantum Fisher information.
So in the resource theory of thermodynamics, free energy is a monotone because both energy and negative entropy act as, they're both types of athermality.
Right.
So the only case it would reduce to just the total, the expectation of the total energy, is if, I guess, maybe you constrain yourself to pure states or
right.
Something else. Is there any kind of sense in which that's also true here, that there's some... Yeah, I mean, here it's a product, right? You could think of like 1 over 1 minus purity as
yeah.
A measure of purity, and you're taking the product of measurement information, and that measure purity is, it's not a sum anymore like it was for the free energy. So is it, can I think of it as a resource that...
It's the log. Mm-hmm. The log.
Sure.
The purity is the log of our range. It's the exponential.
Okay, yeah, maybe this sum versus product is not important.
Yeah, I don't take...
sense in which I can say time translation asymmetry can come in the form of quantum Fisher information or purity, and it's kind of like I can transfer back between these two
I mean, that's a stronger statement, like in the sense that probably in the IID regime you might be able to make something. But I would say there are at least two different relevant things when you want to think about the time translation asymmetry. The same amount of quantum Fisher information in a very mixed state is different from that amount of quantum Fisher information in a state which is less noisy. And this is a formula. I cannot make something, make a stronger claim. I would like to, but I still don't have any stronger result.
Sure.
But I understand the intuition and I agree. It would be nice to exactly decompose them.
There's kind of a disanalogy in the sense that the free energy, which calls these two terms, the expectation of the hamiltonian and the entropy, neither one by itself is an aformality monotone. Only the sum is an aformality.
Right.
Whereas here, quantum Fisher information all by itself is a monotone for.
Right, I understand that.
So that kind of suggests that what I want is not possible.
Right.
In the sense in which sort of trading off between two quantities.
Right.
I mean, so we just finish the presentation and then
sure.
We'll go.
Thank you. Thanks for
listening. Iman again.